House Finance come to order. We have President Representative Guerra, Representative T. Wilson, Representative Guttenberg, Vice Chair Fairclough Stoltz, Co-Chair Thomas, Representative Dugan, and Representative Costello with Representative Hawker. And Representative Jewell has some other conflicts, have been in and out. One of the members will have to leave at 2 o'clock briefly and we'll be back. But I don't think, no, it's 2 o'clock now, isn't it? I'm trying to remember my best notes and readjust my mental notes here. I have a photographic memory. Sometimes it feels a little old. But that we have, we've been through, we know where this journey has led us, and we eventually have to get to the decision-making point. And we're going to go through the process of offering and voting on amendments. We're going to have the Department of Revenue and any adjuncts you want to have or ancillary folks to come up to you'll certainly have the opportunity to respond and comment on any of the amendments as any sponsor of a bill to address the amendments. And following that, we'll take up the fiscal note issue, which I think will probably permeate some of our discussions throughout, but that's probably unavoidable. And then make a motion if it's to move it out, and we'll have the ensuing final version of third reading in House Finance. So just to let folks know where we're at, and if there's any comments or objections to that process, just to lay it out. Representative Guerra.
It would help me if we went through the fiscal note first. Just personally, we've been waiting for this for a long time, and that seems to sort of close the testimony, and I would prefer to do that before amendments if possible, but that's just my opinion.
Well, I don't have a problem with that. It's probably going to come up in the discussion of that, so I think that's probably a fair request. And well, you were so nice to me on the floor, and I left, and I didn't know. It was probably good. I might have blushed and wept a little bit, Representative Guerra, so thank you. So we'll go in that order, but of course we'll readdress the fiscal note at the end. I do have some specks of red color on this black card of mine, believe it or not.
We all do, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Butcher.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We'll come back to it at the end as well.
For the record, my name is Brian Butcher, Commissioner Designee of the Department of Revenue. With me is Sherry Nienheis, petroleum economist, who worked on the preparation of the fiscal note. And we'll walk through pages 2 and 3 of the analysis section that includes 7 points. And then page 4 is simply kind of a side-by-side, so you can see the cumulative effect of the fiscal note. Number 1 is the interest rate on delinquent taxes changing from the greater of 5 percentage points or 11% to the lesser of 3 percentage points or 11%. Looking over the last 3 fiscal years, the average annual net revenue to the state has been about $30 million in revenue to the general fund and about $111 million in revenue to the CBR, so about $140 million. This affects both underpayments that a company would have to pay to the state, as well as overpayments that the state would have to pay back to a company. So it goes both directions, and passage of this bill, if you were to go on the estimates over the last 3 years, would probably reduce it by about $50 or $60 million. But that varies greatly depending on the year, depending on what the activity's been. And the department can't predict what an overpayment or an underpayment, what the state would be on the hook for or company into the future. But that just gives you a kind of a snapshot of the last 3 years over what we've looked at.
Representative Dugan.
Thank you. I'm sorry. Reduce it? What are we reducing?
We're lowering the interest rate on delinquent taxes from the greater of 11% or 5 percentage points. The the Fed plus 5 percentage points to 11% or the Fed plus 3 percentage points, the lesser of.
I understood that, but so we're reducing.
I think
are we making the cost to the state bigger or smaller?
Through the chair, Representative Dugan, I think I understand what you're asking now.
Thank you.
What it would do is now it's being compounded quarterly. The statute refers to a time when interest rates were very high. As an example, 11% was not unusual. With the last few years of low fiscal interest rate environments, it's now what we believed prohibitive, not just on the company side, but also on the state side in terms of what they're paying. It's compounded quarterly, so if there is a couple of years building up, it can get to the point where the amount paid in interest almost equals what the amount of the taxes owed was, whether the state's paying it out or not. It would be a lower interest rate being paid one direction or the other. So we'd be looking at, if you base it on the last three fiscal years, taking in penalties a little less than we have been currently.
And that's the $60 million number that you referred to then?
That's correct. That was just the ballpark estimate.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate it.
On the same point, thank you. In the title of the bill, it refers to the interest rate, but the bill mostly is about, hopefully it's about increasing exploration, development, and production. So what part of this change is related to that change? How is this affected to affect that?
Through the chair, Representative Guttenberg, this is what we see more kind of a cleanup for the bill, as a piece of the bill, as opposed to actually affecting that kind of change. The first week that I started, if I can digress a little bit, Mr. Chairman, the first week that I started,
all 2 weeks.
Yeah.
I had a conversation with the previous Deputy Commissioner, Marcia Davis, and she had pointed out to me that the kind of discussed this issue in terms of a payment the state was making, saying it was an extremely large payment that was going along with what we owed because of this. The department has discretion in, depending on the circumstances, on what an amount of taxes paid or owed would be in situations like this, but we don't with this interest. And so she and I talked about it, and it kind of was stuck in my head. And then as we kind of carried forward and had conversations, and I asked a few of the industry folks what they thought about it, and it was the same opinion that Ms. Davis had, that in today's low interest rate environment, having to pay such a high interest on an overpayment or an underpayment that in many situations were not the fault of any fault of the company or the state, might have had to do with a regulation change or whatever would result in an overpayment or an underpayment, that the change made sense. So this is just kind of a change to the law to make more sense, more than it is trying to do something to put more production in the pipeline.
Well, I understand that, and I think I'm seeing where you're going. But we're talking about 50 or 60 million, possibly less, possibly more, depending upon what the world of things. I just sort of like to have seen a little bit more understanding about the fiscal relationship, because if it makes sense, it's something clearly we should do. You know, because the state, because both parties are in it, and we don't want to penalize people for underreporting or overreporting. So, you know, we'd like them to be right down the pike. But, you know, it has no quantitative revenue impact. It will on somebody.
Yeah. And through the chair, Representative Guttenberg, if this change would make a net increase to the state, which it may very well do in some years, it's still something that we feel needed to be changed.
Yeah, just to call it, you know, a net on the positive side to the state on delinquent tax charges is not necessarily something that we should look forward to. I mean, you know, we should be helping more than anything else, because we want everybody to do what's right. So, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Butcher.
Number two deals with the one of the three large policy pieces of the bill, which has to do with changing the taxes from a progressivity rate that it is today to brackets, as well as capping it at 50%. And so what the fiscal note shows you in two different charts, the first one is a focus on production tax only. And looking down the first column, it shows you, based on the Department of Revenue preliminary spring revenue forecast, what the projected reductions in revenue would be over the years covered by the fiscal note if HB 110 passed and there was no new development or nothing else came online, as well as a few estimates on what those numbers would look like for the benefit of the committee if there were to be a certain percentage of increase in production. And we factored in when we worked on this as well that increased production would result in an increase in credits and an increase in spending that would also come from state, what the revenue the state would get, and so that has been factored into it. The second chart shows production tax plus total royalties, because the first chart only shows the production tax, but if you were to discuss increased production, it gives you a snapshot that would include the royalty piece of it that you obviously that the state would be receiving with increased production, and gives more of a big picture view based on the production scenarios than just specifically the production tax. So you can look at chart one, at specifically the production tax. You can look at chart two that shows more of a big picture.
Representative Guerra.
Thank you. When you go to column two, which is forecast 5%, forecast 10%, just so I understand, forecast 5%, let's say, is that 5% more than the forecasted decline? So we've got a forecasted decline of, let's say, 5%. Does the forecast 5% mean essentially zero, or does the forecast 5% mean a 10% increase in production, erasing the 5% decline plus adding 5% more?
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, it would be 5% on the total production number. So if the number was 600,000, it would be 5% increase on that 600,000.
Through the chair, I still don't understand. Is that 5% above what's forecast, or is that 5% above this year's level?
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, that is 5% above what is forecast.
Thank you.
Proceed, Mr. Butcher.
Okay. Taking a look at number three on page three, this piece has to do with a production tax for areas that have not been commercialized or unitized of 15%, with brackets of progressivity up to 40%. These are fields that have never had any production, and as a result, the fiscal note is zero, but I'd like to note, Mr. Chairman, that this would be a positive number if there's any production at all as a result of the passage of the legislation. So this could not go negative, it could only go positive, but we don't have a specific prediction on exactly how many potential millions of dollars that might result as a result of this part of the bill passing.
I disagree with that premise that it could not go negative. You could be granting a 15% tax rate to fields that were gonna go online already, right? I mean, Great Bear bought their leases in 2010, for example. So if you meant to say that this provision couldn't cost the state money, then I disagree with that. You might spur new production, or you might just give a lower tax rate to fields that were going to go online anyway, in which case that would cost the state a lot of money.
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, we're speaking specifically to fields as of December 31st, 2008 that have not been unitized. We do not expect any of those fields to be at a point right now where we believe they would be coming online with or without the passage of the legislation.
Thank you.
Number four is a provision requiring that credits be taken over 2 years. This would primarily be revenue neutral. The first year that it would take effect, we would have an entire year that a company would be taking a credit. But right now, as an example, in 2011, you've got companies taking the last half of their 2012 credit, or excuse me, 2010 credit, and then the first half of their 2011 credit. So it more or less equals an entire year. We're just making a split of them, so it's getting half a year through it, which has been an extreme burden on the tax division, trying to sort out in twice the number of tax years how the credits work instead of just one. So it would be a revenue-neutral provision. Number five, the 40% credit for well lease expenditures is expanded north of 68 degrees north latitude. We estimate that the effect would be annually $200 million to $400 million. That will vary on how much this credit is used. The more it's used, the higher number, but that would be a positive in terms of getting more production for the state, and we try to speculate a higher number with the belief that it would result in a higher number of credits being taken than we've seen over the last couple of years. So 400 is on the high end, but we put 200 to 400 just to give a scope of what we think it would be. Number six, the Small Producer New Area Development and Alternative Tax Credit for Exploration Programs extended from their current sunset date of 2016 to 2021. This was something that was added in the House Resources Committee. We expect the small producer credits to increase within the next several years to 40 to 50 million a year. However, it's extremely difficult for the department to estimate, starting in the year 2016 to the year 2021, what this would mean for the state, so we can look at it historically, but ultimately these are tax credits we won't see coming in for between 5 and 10 years from now. Number seven, the tax information disclosure statute was expanded to include disclosures of types of credits claimed and types of expenditures for which the credits were claimed. This is also something that was added in the House Resources Committee, and it would allow when the department collects more information from the industry on what they're spending and where the spending's going, we would be allowed to share publicly with the legislature specifically what this information says and our interpretation of what we're actually seeing as a result of this. And then the last paragraph discusses the addition of two auditor positions to administer the additional credit and reporting provisions starting in fiscal year 13.
Mr. Gettenberg. Thank you. Well, that last line is certainly something that I'm glad to see it, to see in this fiscal note. But there's a comment in 4, 5, and 6. In 4, you say the last line, another $100 million refunds would likely be sought for credit certificates. In 5, we estimate the provision will decrease revenue in the amount of annually based on estimates for drilling costs. And in 6, the fourth line down, we expect the small producer credits to increase. My comment to this is we've constantly asked you about what modeling you've done and where your expectations are. And, you know, you've consistently told us that you really can't do modeling. There's no way of knowing what would possibly happen, you know, in order to better understand this process and how we go from step to steps, because that, at the end of the day, what we hope to happen is that there's an increase in production, exploration, development, and production. And I see here that you obviously have been doing some of that. So, you know, to come up with a fiscal note, because all along I couldn't figure out how you could kind of make some of your overall assumptions without at least some estimates of changes. So could you address that for me?
Sure. Through the chair, Representative Gettenberg. We have been asked to, in all of the committees that we have presented the bill to, even though page one gives indeterminate information, because truly we can't really nail it down, we have been asked to give our best ballpark estimates. In some situations, we feel like we can give a snapshot that can give you an idea. In others, we can't. As an example, number 3, talking about non-unitized fields where we're not getting any production, We've been asked, what do you think the ballpark would be on that? Would you take in $600 million more? Would you take in $1.2 billion more? That's an area we don't feel like we have enough information to kind of make that assumption. When dealing with something like small producer credits, we can look in the very short term what we see this year or next year and what we've seen historically in the last year or two, and at least give the committee kind of a snapshot on what we think they might be looking at in the out years.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. That's as good as an answer I've gotten before. Thank you.
Representative Dugan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, just a couple of questions. I'm looking at page 404 here. And it says preliminary spring 2011 forecast. That's not something we've actually gotten from you yet. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Dugan, that is correct. We expect to have it out the first week of April. Our target date's April 8th. We're going to try to move it up a little bit. And one of the reasons why it's been delayed is, it hasn't been delayed. It's always after March 31st because that's the true-up date for the previous year where we get the hard numbers of what each of the companies have spent, and we're able to tighten down more what the numbers are going forward. And at that point, we'll be able to give you – we don't anticipate it being much different than what we've prepared, but there can be occasional tweaks. So we haven't been able to do all the detailed work we need to kind of nail that down. However, we wanted to give the committee as updated a picture of where we see the forecast going in the future than we could, as opposed to keeping with the fall forecast that we had when we began the process, and then next week rolling out completely different numbers.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, Commissioner, what I don't see here is this is low, we're getting more revenue, which changes these numbers, but I don't know how much they're changed basically by the forecast from where it was the last time we looked at this. If you follow that, if that question makes sense to you, is there some way you can tell me roughly how that would be?
Through the chair, Representative Dugan, I'm going to ask Sherry Nienheist to address that. I don't know if it's as simple as just comparing our previous fiscal note to this fiscal note. Or,
but believe me, Commissioner, I don't expect anything to be simple there. So.
Yes. For the record, my name is Sherry Nienheist. I'm a petroleum economist with the Department of Revenue. Representative Dugan, through the chair, you're right. It's difficult to compare these. Probably the one thing that we do have nailed down on our forecast is we have gone through the process of assembling our price forecast. So that was one thing that we wanted to update, simply because we've seen prices go up so much higher than we had in our forecast. So one thing you'll see is there's a jump in our price forecast from our fall from for fiscal year 12. It's about $8 more. And in fiscal year 13, we have about also $8 more, $7 more. We do have that part of our forecast adjusted, so you will see some differences in the revenue between HB 110 and our forecast in that respect. We also have done some adjustments to our production forecast, but we're still working on that. You'll know that we recently had some announcements by Repsol and by Great Bear and other companies that things are developing even as we're putting together our forecast. So we're still working out the kinks on the production part of it and the cost part of it. And that's probably where we sit as far as a preliminary forecast. We'd like to make sure that we have all that information as updated as possible, partly because probably for the first time since I've been in this job, we're really looking more long-term here. We've in the recent past, in 8, 9, and 10 even, we had quite a bit of price volatility. We were, as a group, instructed to more or less look at the near term because prices were so volatile. in this analysis, we're trying to present the longer term. So we're trying to really make sure that our production forecast and our cost forecast is reasonable, given all the assumptions that we're using for that.
Thank you. And on the fiscal note itself, this is the fiscal note as it existed the last time I looked at it, I think, which runs from $200 to $400 million in 12 to, gee, I don't know where the high is there. Maybe in 17 it would be $2 billion and change. And so anyway, this is the one we've already seen. Am I correct about that? No?
Through the chair, Representative Dugan, these are updated numbers from the original fiscal note. The original fiscal note that came into the committee with the bill was based on our fall forecast. These are updated numbers to our preliminary spring forecast from that original fiscal note.
Right, and the committee members will help me here, but I think these are we saw these numbers at some point during the last couple of days.
Through the chair, Representative Dugan, we presented them on Saturday for the first time. Yeah,
thank you.
And if I could, Mr. Chairman, there is one error in page 4 of the fiscal note. When you look at the description, if you go down to number 6, extend the small producer credits, you're going to see in FY16 and FY17 there's a 125. That should be a negative 125 because those are credits that we would be paying out. The total revenue impact at the bottom, that number is correct. It just, that particular piece of it's incorrect.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Guerra.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to calculate the fiscal notes components and then ask you about something that I hope I'm misreading. So if I look at 2016, $287,000 for hiring the auditors, $50 to $60 million for changing the interest rate, roughly $1.4 billion in lost tax revenue, upwards of $400 million for extra credits. The total is somewhere around $1.4 billion for 2016.
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, if you were to take the high numbers in those cases and factor in zero new production, that would be about right.
Okay, and then here's my worry, through the chair. Page 2, you have this chart that shows what happens in terms of losses to the state, even if the governor's bill increases production, and as you heard, now I don't want to belabor the point, but I don't think this bill is tailored to increase production. But let's say it increases production by 5%, and let's go to this bottom box that you have, production tax plus total royalties, and let's look at 2017. Are you saying that if production goes up by 5% under the governor's bill, we'll still lose $1.2 billion just in production taxes?
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, that is the number. It would also include additional credits that we would be taking out of it as a result of the production coming online. And this also doesn't factor in jobs and prolonging TAPs, and some of this is focused just very specifically on the production tax.
Through the chair.
This
is amazing to me. Does that $1.2 billion in less revenue that we're going to get, even if production goes up by 5%, does that also include the $200 to $400 million in credit costs, or do we add that?
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, this applies to the change in production tax, to the brackets, and then it does not include the new 15% area that would not have a cost but would be looking at more production. So, yes, this is just taking that specific piece of the bill.
Through the chair, what I meant to ask was when we go to the 40% credit, you said that could cost us $200 to $400 million a year or two. I would add that to this $1.2 billion loss?
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, number one, I wouldn't classify it as a loss. This is revenue that has not yet come in. This is a projection of potentially what we'd be dealing with in terms of less revenue. And yes, you could, you would add, if you were trying to put a big picture together of all of that, you would want to add the 200 to 400 million, but you also would want to add the increased royalty barrels coming in. It's a more complex issue than just picking the negatives and adding them up and not taking into account the other issues.
Through the chair, the way I read this, unless I'm wrong, in 2017, if the governor's bill succeeds in adding 5% production, we'll receive $1.2 billion less revenue than without changing the law, plus we'll receive another $200 to $400 million in less revenue because of the 40% tax credit. And even if the governor's bill were to increase production by 10%, and we've never heard evidence really that it will do that in my view, if that were the case, if it increases production by 10%, according to this bottom box, we will lose $914 million in production taxes plus $200 to $400 million in credits. So if this bill works, we lose over $1 billion a year, is the way it looks to me.
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, what you're not considering is that part of this negative number involves the state cashing in credits that would be kind of an investment into future year production. So you can't just take a snapshot of one year and say, okay, we didn't get it that year, without acknowledging that one of the reasons why the number is what it is because we're getting more credits being used for more exploration and more production that's going to add to the long term what we don't see today.
I'm not going to argue with you, so I'll just leave it at that. Thank you.
Representative Costola and Wilson.
Thank you, through the chair. Commissioner, I think you mentioned something that answered my question. I'll just go ahead and ask it. It's about the chart on page 4. So the totals here assume no increase in production, and they do represent the worst-case scenario, and they correspond back to the top chart on page 2. Okay.
Through the chair, Representative Costello, yes, they do. This would assume the changes to the bill and also assume that we would get no new production, which the governor does not believe is a realistic scenario, and neither do I.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's so easy just to take numbers on a bottom line, but let's go back to the job issue. I know in a lot of our testimony we heard from the service industry, not just the companies. Do we not bring other revenue in by these service industries to the oil companies through other kind of corporate taxes that they pay to the state?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, yes, this would. That would be the goal of the legislation. And, in fact, I'm glad you brought that up, because that's been an issue that when you're digging into the minutiae of the numbers and the analysis, sometimes is not focused on enough, in my opinion.
Follow-up, sir. Also, if we do nothing and the jobs keep decreasing in the service industry as they are, it's not another purpose of this bill is to make sure that we have good paying jobs for those currently in the industry and those that we are trying to graduate out of our university?
Through the chairman, Representative Wilson, yes, I would agree with that. And in a lot of the testimony you hear, it not only are Alaskans losing jobs, but Alaskans, experienced Alaskans are moving to other states in, searching for where the work is, which is disturbing when you look at the point that we're already having great difficulty in this state being able to educate Alaskans to get into the workforce, and the idea that we'd be losing experienced Alaskans is even more distressing.
And Mr. Chair, on that point, it's not just people who are moving, it's actually companies that are moving out of state. And I know this is another forecast, which we can all talk about, but in your opinion, are there more jobs offered in the developmental stage of the oil fields versus the exploration stage?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, that would be a question better answered by DNR. I do not know the answer to that.
Any guess?
Representative Wilson, through the chair, I would think that once you are developing a field that could possibly require more employment because you have additional facilities and so forth. So I think that that's probably a likely case.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I just wanted to make it to where the development where we're building infrastructure with roads and other possible. We bring in a lot more service groups to take care of those. So I want to make sure we're not just looking at the bottom line. We're looking at all the other parts that made the oil fields what they are. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Dugan, Kara Guttenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To go back to the question that Representative Wilson asked, Commissioner, what additional revenue would be brought in through, I guess you're talking about corporate income taxes, is that right?
Through the chair, Representative Dugan, specifically what additional in terms of...
Well, I'm sorry, let me try and ask this question in English. I believe what you said in answer to Representative Wilson's question was that there would be more income than it is shown in this account of these taxes, and that that income would become from basically people go to work, the companies make money, and they pay a corporate income tax. Am I getting that right?
Through the chair, Representative Dugan, I believe I was referring to other taxes that are not included in this fiscal note, such as production taxes, property taxes. Is that?
I'll come back to this when
we're going to consider this our fiscal note discussion because we've gone in such depth. So just we'll keep going.
Okay, then I won't go back.
No, I just want to let people know. Let's let this be. Because I think we're going pretty in-depth. We were just going to have the cursory round, but this is such a part, so people ask your questions on this.
Thank you. Then if that's what we're doing now, I'll try to ask the question again. What you told Representative Wilson was that there was other income, basically, besides the income we're talking about right here in these taxes. That really ought to be accounted for in terms of what happens if we give a bunch of money to the industry and they decide that they're going to do something and they do it and people get jobs and companies do better and all of that income somehow could be accounted against this. And so all I'm trying to ask you is, based on the numbers you've got here, how much income would there be? How much additional income might there be?
Through the chair, Representative Dugan, if I understand you correctly, you're asking what additional income would be coming in for the state from the state or to the state other than this production tax income? Or Representative Wilson's question, as I read it, had to do with kind of a multiplier effect of if we create 100 new jobs on the oil patch, that's going to have a multiplier effect for the state economy. And I was referencing that at one point. Is that the answer?
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to throw out a lifeline to Representative Wilson here.
Representative Wilson.
This probably won't happen very often. I guess the part that I was referring to the service industry, the other businesses that are not the oil fields that, you know, I probably shouldn't throw names out, but Flowline, who happens to be in our area, I'm assuming they probably pay other types of taxes as a corporation of the state that is not put into here. And that's, I was talking about the service industry themselves are all businesses that also pay some sorts of taxes.
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, Representative Dugan, yeah, those would be corporate taxes, property taxes.
And thank you.
No problem.
So, got any idea what they're worth?
Through the chair, Representative Dugan, we do have yearly listings of what we bring in for corporate, and which we'd be happy to get for you if you can just we'll get them to you in a few minutes.
Representative Fairclough, we'll go.
Mr. Chairman, I'm on page 86 in the fall. Unupdated. So if we're looking specifically at general corporate taxes, it's $80 million. if it's where we're looking at petroleum corporate, it's 447.9 or almost $500 million based on the revenue book, if I place the zeros in the right place, Representative Dugan.
Thank you both. I'm getting smarter all the time. But that's not exactly my question. My question is, what is the increment worth? Because the argument is that essentially we're going to get more activity, et cetera, and it's going to generate more money. I'm not asking about what the total is. I want to know what the department's expectation of the increment of additional taxes is in that situation.
For the chair, Representative Dugan, the department's estimate of additional taxes based on future developments that haven't yet occurred. Is that what the question is?
You know, that sounds stupid when you put it that way. that is what I'm asking, because that's where this conversation went, you know. I mean, I recognize that it might be difficult for you to answer that question, but if so, you shouldn't have brought it into the discussion.
Through the chair, Representative Dugan, I was simply agreeing with Representative Wilson when she said that an increase in activity, an increase in jobs, and more business for companies would bring in more income for the state. I wasn't getting into the specifics of it. We could certainly try to put together some kind of matrix that compared increases in oil and gas production tax to increases in corporate tax for service companies, but I probably couldn't get that to you today.
Mr. Chairman, this is me waving the white flag on this question. I appreciate you're playing the game with me, Commissioner, and I hope you have you get a good parting gift. Thank you.
Let me look at my list here. Did Representative Guerra already go?
Yeah, thank you. You know, the subject of jobs keeps coming up, and it just occurs to me, we never heard from the Department of Labor. So all I'm going to use, and I'm happy to hand this out, is in July, the Department of Labor gave me their last forecast of the latest forecast we have of the jobs of oil and gas in Alaska. And rather than this picture of disappearing jobs that those who want to pass the bill have been talking about, jobs are, in 2010, are forecast at 27% higher than they were under the prior tax system. In 2006, they were at 10,100. In 2005, under the ELF system, they were at 8,700. And in 2010, they were at 12,700. So 4,000 more jobs by 2010. Doesn't sound like the job loss case that you've been making. Granted that they go up and down on an annual basis.
I appreciate the information there, but we're trying on the fiscal note issue. But you know, go ahead and finish this question. But we're going to get to the full debate at some point. So
I will pass this out. I'm going to take this as the accurate reflection of job numbers on your fiscal note. And this too relates to jobs. Let's look at page two. I think it's fair that you include the impact on royalties of increased production. So you forecast that if the governor's bill results in 5% more production, the state takes in $1.2 billion less in production taxes. The state takes in $200 to $400 million less because of credits. I think the state is taking in $1.4 billion less a year. That's going to have a negative job impact, not necessarily on the oil patch, but in terms of the state's ability to hire teachers, troopers, firefighters, do construction work. Have you factored that in?
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, yes, we have. And, in fact, one of the slides we presented on Saturday shows that if you were to take our preliminary spring forecast and take the passage of HB 110 and also assume there will be no new development in the next 10 years as a result of this, and that the governor and the legislature would not do a thing as a result of that, which I find a little unrealistic, And you were to take the ledge finance estimate on what they expect the budget to increase. And, in fact, we just heard from ledge finance today that we overestimated by a little bit what their increase was, so it's actually a little bit less than that. We still showed that we would be in excess of $10 billion in the CBR and SBR at the end of a 10-year period that we would accept, that the state would accept the fact that there had been no new development and not done anything in terms of oil taxes. So that gives me some comfort in the passage of this legislation. And also, if I could add one follow-up to Representative Garris' question. We have some information from the Department of Labor on comparisons of calendar year unemployment insurance claimants, and it's the oil and gas industry-related claimants for unemployment has almost tripled in this state between 2006 and calendar year 2010. So if there are new jobs that are going on up there, they don't appear to be coming from for Alaskans.
What? On that point. Mr. Chairman, what's almost tripled to what?
2006, there were 904 individuals. In 2010, 2,540.
And as far as we know, there was a concomitant rise in the actual employment in the oil patch. Do we know if that's continued?
Through the chair, Representative Dugan. I am commenting on Representative Guerra's comments on his information. There's been, there had been a small increase in total jobs up there up until 2009, took a dip in 2010. But, and I'm happy to pass this out to the committee. You'll see that it's been an increase that wasn't just a blip.
Representative Hawker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I might,
yep.
Talking about the fiscal note.
In the spirit of debate on the fiscal note, it's exactly, sir. And I heard you say that it was sort of debate of the fiscal note, and admit I'm having to work on the fly and responding to the question asked here, but I have of the Alaska Economic Trends publication from the Alaska Department of Labor Workforce Development. This is the issue dated January of 2011, and on page 6 of this particular report, if I might, this is very specifically highlights that, and if I might cite, less oil production means more risk, and declining oil production being a liability for more than 20 years, talk about the falling, but the broader growing problem of low production increases uncertainty of its potential economic growth. So I think, you know, somehow trying to use, I'm not sure what particular version or how old it might have been cited previously, but, you know, then I go into Section 8, and there's a whole section in here about how oil is no longer fueling our expansion. It just, again, I'd sure like, you know, make sure that we've got the most current information in front of us as that debate goes forward. But that was a second point. My technical point was, we're sort of in uncharted territory here with this bill. Best of my knowledge, the state has never considered a reduction in the level at which government confiscates wealth from the private sector. I think the only thing I've ever experienced here, with perhaps one exception, has gone the other way. We've always increased what we take. I think a spectacular exhibit to the contrary is the film tax credits. We made it a whole lot more profitable, and we just flat out gave away the $100 million state dollars to the film industry, and look what happened there. But what I would like to use, and I've got the information, I'm able to look at it for 2013 and 2014, because it's information that is before us, and I'm looking at the Department of Revenue's chart that was presented in there March 26th, last Saturday's presentation, and it just gives a basically what revenue has anticipated to be under ACES, estimated production tax revenue under ACES 2013 and 2014 is my site here. And here I have the original fiscal note that accompanied the ACES legislation to the floor of the Senate, the final vote on this bill. I'm looking at 2013. Well, actually, what I find particularly interesting is that the debate that on the ACES bill that went to the floor way back then, the outside realm that's considered here for an oil price is $80. What's the outside? ACES was never stress tested at higher oil prices on what its consequence on the economy might be, what its consequence on the industry might be. And to put a specific number to it here, for 2013, as it went to the floor, and this was before the bill was run up on the floor, as we know there were substantial increases to the tax level on the floor of the Senate that evening. But the House Bill 2001, the Senate Committee Substitute Finance, projected for the year 2013 production tax revenue of $1.9 billion. We're now projecting for 2013 $3.1 billion. So, you know, folks that voted and supported this coming through here, they were telling us we're going to take about $1.9 billion out of this, and we're in fact looking at three. So, the difference there is, quick calculation in my head, is $1.2 billion more we're taking out of industry's hide in 2013 than was voted on back when the bill passed. And I'm going to take your worst-case scenario, no production increase, no nothing, the adjustments, the reduction in government take, government skim from the private sector. Your round numbers here, looking at 2013, in a worst-case scenario, $500 million, round 469 up. We're already raking in $1.2 billion more than was anticipated when the bill passed. Because again, the bill did not contemplate the high price environment we're in here. I think these factors have to be taken into consideration as we do evaluate whether we have in fact reached a level of overtaxing our most valuable industry in this state. The same number works for 2014. And in 2014, net number is we're now taking in $1.7 billion more, anticipating, than what was originally voted on in ACES, and you know we're looking at a tax reduction of less than $1 billion of that. So I kind of look at it. We seem to be kind of along here, sort of splitting the difference between we're still having a higher tax than was intended when these bills, this tax regime passed, but we are looking at moderating something that and I think there's been compelling testimony that reducing taxes. I don't subscribe to the theory that you tax industry into production, into positive activity. I subscribe to a more free market concept that says when you lower taxes, production increases. And if I might, in the spirit of the fiscal note, Mr. Chairman, and making that point, because that is the point we're debating here, is the how much we're skimming from industry and how much is that proper? And what does motivate industry? And today published on Bloomberg News, dated March 29th, 2011, we had conversations in this room the other day just about the United Kingdom's increase in their taxes on oil production profits from 50% to 62%. And Statoil, Norway, that is a state oil company, has officially announced that it has put on hold a $10 billion plan to develop the Mariner and Barasee fields in the United Kingdom, and said it is less likely to buy British assets after a tax increase. Listen to it. Of course, the government official is saying that they're just postponing their decision, not the investment. But we go back to the two-tiered graph that we've seen before for UK oil production. That's a camel's hump. The declining production until they hit bottom existed until. That was under the last time that the United Kingdom wanted to go grab a bunch of money to pay for social programs. And in fact, now, where they cut off in 1993 and eliminated their production, high production profits tax on new oil field development, look what happened. The North Sea production reached a peak even higher than it had reached under its existing regime. So, again, respectfully, this continued characterization of this as a giveaway, a give back. No, sir. It is an investment in a sustained and more robust economy in the state. I really appreciate the effort you've gone to in this fiscal note to point us in that direction. Thank you.
With that discussion of the fiscal note, I think we probably played out the fiscal note. We're going to come back and visit it, it's going to be referenced in our final closing. So I think we could. I don't want to do two rounds of full debate, although it's worthy as a worthy subject. But I don't want to be at 50 here before.
Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to point out that some of us were just trying to get your questions answered.
No, I understand. No, but that's no disrespect to any of the process. It's just.
Right, I understand.
That's okay. But that.
And that's not on fiscal. It's not going to belabor this.
Is it? I'm more concerned about the briefly part.
I better try and honor that. The last speaker said something to the effect of wherever those job numbers came from that I supplied, they came from the Department of Labor. They were from July. Those are the most recent ones we have. I've offered to distribute them to the committee. So the wherever is the state's own Department of Labor that shows that jobs are 27% higher today than they were in 2005.
We'll have the subjective discussion of that in the next round. So those are that we're going to go into the amendments. We're going to hold back number one and two for now. We'll start with amendment number three. If anybody wishes to offer that amendment.
Amendment number three. Mr. Chair, I offer amendment number three.
Objection, sir. It was so compelling, the fact that you declined to speak previously. It's under debate. There is an objection.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just, I'm going to ask the committee's indulgence. I have two amendments that I'm going to talk about, and I just have to make sure which of the two this one is.
Well, we'll take a brief at ease for a second. In order after that ever so brief recess. We had before us amendment number three. There was an objection to it. Committee discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Amendment number three would take a different approach than the governor's bill. You know, there are two ways that you can approach an attempt to increase production on the North Slope. The main thrust of the governor's approach is to reduce taxes and hope the companies spend the money back here. We know back from 2006, when tax rates were very low, that investment was lower, that oil production was declining, and frankly, it didn't work back then. And we also know from the state's own publication, an advertisement they took out in this week's Petroleum News, that using credits actually attracts investment, because with credits, you actually have to spend the money in the state. You have to hire people in the state, and you have to do what the credit is aimed at in order to get the money from the state. So Amendment number 3 raises the exploration credit to 50%. It caps it when you stack all the other credits that you can take and deductions at 85%. But it raises the exploration credit. And that's to address the concern the administration came in with in the beginning of this debate. When this started, the administration had one main point. It was that exploration wells were down and exploration was down. The smartest way to increase exploration is to grant an enhanced credit to encourage companies to drill exploration wells. They won't get the money unless they drill the wells. So that answers the governor's question, or the weakness in the governor's bill, which is they get the money even if they want to just take it out of the state. This requires them to spend it here. If the main problem was exploration wells, this is exactly what addresses it. It makes it more profitable for a company to drill an exploration well. And what we heard also from the Commissioner of Revenue was that development wells, even though they're higher now, they're at their highest level since 2005 or 2006, those aren't going to get us out of this production decline. We need new exploration. So, Mr. Chair, I don't see anything in the governor's bill that's going to lead to new exploration. What I see in the governor's bill is a proposal that's going to lead to capital flight, and under the most recent fiscal note, what I see under the governor's legislation was, even if production goes up, we're going to lose about $1.5 billion a year. I think this is a smarter way to go. An exploration credit that says hire people in this state to do more exploration, and we'll help you pay for those wells, but we're not going to let you just take the money out of the state. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And Representative Gary, you distributed this. Would you like this to be posted as well?
Sure. I think this is the ad that the state took out, and frankly, I think they were. I applaud them for doing it. But this is this is the case where the state says that ACES is working, that the state has been a good partner for new explorers, according to this ad. It's the case that the Department of Revenue did not make when they were here. It's almost the opposite of that case. It's very weird to have the state make this one case on this piece of paper and have heard what we've heard from the state, the opposite, in trying to get this bill passed.
I guess I just comment. I kind of applaud DNR for trying to put the best face on what we are. If I'm trying to put a personals ad in to attract somebody, I'm not going to tell somebody I live in my parents' basement. And I'm not going to tell somebody I'm unemployed and my favorite activity are Star Trek conventions. that said,
you just did.
hypothetically, and that's actually. That's actually a joke I sometimes tell. I still live on the street I grew up on, but not in my parents' basement. But that said, I DNR certainly has to put the best face on trying to attract development under the scenarios and other past policy. But that's just my, I guess that falls under editorial, not a question. So there's other questions on this issue.
Mr. Chairman, it's not a question. It's a comment on the amendment. Mr. Chairman, I'm going to speak in opposition to the amendment in sort of just reverse, using the same philosophy of this particular face. And we had testimony before this committee that already have said that we incentivize greatly exploration. And that's what this does from a very positive way. It says we're great for exploration. And we have headlines about people who are interested in taking advantage of the credits that we've put out there for exploration. We agreed with the Resource Committee in accepting an amendment in the CS that's before us that extended those years because we do have those headlines about people interested, but we don't really have the investment yet. We have people talking about investing that capital and expressing interest from a different side that our progressivity and the severance tax that they will have to pay means that they can't take their product to market yet and sell it. So I would remind the committee that there are different phases and different entities out there that want to invest and are attracted to different components of Alaska's tax policy for exploration. But this is our face. We have great exploration credits. We just can't get anything in the pipeline to monetize because they're telling us they're ready to sell those after they find the oil through the great exploration credits. They've got to sell it to someone else who actually has to go to the capital market and find an investor to invest in the facilities to take that oil and monetize it for Alaskans. So the press releases are great, but we need the follow-through. And the governor's amended bill that's before us extends those years, as the Resource Committee said to this committee that we should consider so that maybe we have a few more interested parties to explore. And I'll just go back to what Representative Hawker has said, and which I think is so apropos, that we never anticipated the amount of revenues that are coming into the state. We never stress-tested that higher level of production and the higher dollar amount above $80 per barrel of what that would do to the opportunity to attract capital into the market. So, Mr. Chairman, I'll leave it at that. Pun intended, or superintended. I believe Alaska offers excellent incentives for exploration credit, and that those dollars are there as well as the dates to do that. And I will be voting in opposition to Amendment Number 3.
Representative Hawker.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. To the amendment also, I certainly respect the spirit in which the amendment's offered. It very much has stated very laudable goals, goals I support. I think, unfortunately, I'm seeing a flawed execution, laudable goals, flawed execution here, quite sincerely. I'm looking more, I can't help myself, having spent my life as a CPA, I tend to look at the technical aspects of the amendment. And if these first three sections are basically, adding a new limit to these amount of credits that can be taken, putting a big capstone cap on them all. I think that was mentioned. We're going to give a higher number a little bit later in the bill, and we're going to put a cap on them all. And the language on page 2 in lines 28 through 30, what we're looking at doing is to put this cap on the credit. We're saying that having to be citing from the bill in order to do this, but that the amount of the credit for the capital expenditure, the amount, is reduced by another amount that is necessary so here's the benchmark test, so that the tax benefit percentage, no longer an amount, but a percentage of something, is not more than 85% of the capital expenditure. For the life of me, this is accounting alchemy. I don't know how you convert percentages into hard dollar expenditures. I think it's a technical error. Certainly could be worked through with better language, but I think there is a very confusing, conflicting technical error that, as an accountant, I have no idea how you would write that equation. Going on to Section 4, which is where we create, we enhance the credit, the majority of the credits, particularly the credits that affect the North Slope of Alaska, from a 30 and 40% tier, depending upon certain criteria, to a fixed 50%. It's allowed for exploration expenditures, then qualifying under B in an amount equal to 50%. And we delete the 80, 90, or 100, particularly down to that subsection 5. We're deleting an area where we're taking 80, 90, or 100% of an amount described in L of that section. So in that case, we're actually lowering the credits available. And that section L, Mr. Chairman, is one that should be of grave concern to all of us in South Central Alaska. That section L is the language we added last year that was intended to create the Cook Inlet land rush. That is the provision that provides for a substantial incentive for the first three unaffiliated persons drilling an offshore exploration well for the purpose of discovering oil or gas in the Cook Inlet that drills deep and penetrates and evaluates a prospect in the pre-tertiary zone using a jackup rig. With all respect, we've got at least two organizations that are in the process of working to take advantage of that provisions in statute, move a jackup rig to the Cook Inlet, get this vital deep drilling done. This is an issue that's just visceral with me because this is about keeping the heat and lights on in my community and not having people freeze in the dark one of these first winters as we try to bring the necessary production enhancements to the Cook Inlet. We had a long discussion on that last year, and I am not at all comfortable with compromising that fact in the statute. So again, respectfully, I think that could have been worked around with a differently drafted amendment, and so could the accounting alchemy earlier. But at this point, I won't be supporting the amendment as it's laid here. And well, that's it, sir.
Representative Edinburgh, then Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, I want to thank the department like others have, because all we've heard so far from the administration and others is Alaska's not open for business. Alaska's not open for business. You know, the tax structure, is closing people out, and now we have this ad, Alaska, we're open for business. I mean, they're touting 40% exploration credits. The more you pay, the more you invest, the less you pay. I'm delighted to finally see this out in public by the administration. I hope they continue this trend, because if you keep telling people you're closed for business, whether you are or not, they'll start believing you. And I think that's been, from my perspective, a regrettable thing that's been out there. But there's two parts of the bill, and this amendment addresses the one that I think is the more important part of it, and that is about exploration. And we've heard from the administration, from DNR, from oil and gas, and the three gentlemen that sat here before about understanding the nature of the basin, and that's everything from the coast to the foothills, and how little we know, and we've heard it in other legislatures that really we know so little about our oil basin. But if we can gold play this a little bit and not gold fence it, and that we can have people come up and see, this would say 50% of exploration costs, and knowing what they're paying in other places, and knowing that we do have the rocks here, which is what's important at the end of the day for all the other things that we've heard about. You've got to have the rocks. You don't have the rocks, you've got nothing. Illinois has the best tax rate in the country. They don't have any rocks. Nobody's investing there. So if we can sweeten the pot for investors to bring in more independents, more explorers, I think that's the direction we should be going. If the logic of what the governor and this bill is trying to get at, that an amendment like this, and Mr. Bullock was here earlier who wrote the amendment, I don't know if he could explain Representative Hawker's situation, if that was actually part of the intent. I'm sure it wasn't. But I think this, if we're going to go in the direction the bill wants to go, and we can focus it down to just exploration, and this amendment gets us there, I think this is what we need to do.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's amazing to me that we can all look at this one page and take considerably different views on it. Because my view is we absolutely are open for exploration. We've seen more explorers come. We have seen more holes drilled up to this last year. So the question for me becomes, why are we not developing after we've drilled? And that, to me, is where the disconnect is for the state of Alaska, is that we're having explorers come in, and they're drilling in hopes to find that piece. And once they have found some oil, now it's up to them to go find investors with more money so that they can build the infrastructure, the roads, whatever, the pipes, the gathering lines, everything that it takes to do. And that's where we're missing the boat at. That's when now all of a sudden they have to take our tax regime and the other credits that we have, because we go down from the explorers, we give them up to 65%, then we go down to 45%, and then when we get to production, down to 25%. And And I want to thank the Department of Revenue for helping me understand that we do have a system that starts out high because we know that they could have dry holes, and we want to make sure that if that happens, that they don't just quit on one. So although I applaud what the maker of this amendment is trying to do, I guess where we disagree, which probably won't be the last, that I think we do an amazing job for this, and I think that the wonderful literature that you brought me proves that. But where I think we do miss the boat is that we are not seeing the producers come. We are seeing the little guy come and do it, and unless we can find somebody with the other parts of the money to do the development, we're going to continuously see it go down. And the biggest thing that I have learned, Mr. Chair, through this whole process is the interior has less than 2 weeks of heating oil if the pipeline goes down. And so, to me, the development stage and the actual production is where all of our effort needs to go. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other? Next up, Gara Rappa.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If the committee would do me the favor, just two technical things. Representative Hawker is right. We asked for this amendment to increase the exploration credit to 50% and to cap it at 85%, but that's Section 5 at page 3 from lines 21 through 25 should not be in there. We did not intend to impact the Cook Inlet production tax, so I would like to offer an amendment to the amendment to delete page 3, lines 21 through 25, and renumber accordingly.
We are going to do this in this, but we're not going to try to do conceptual amendments on the fly. But we'll, I think on this that's a discussion point, Representative Hawker.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, conceptual amendments on the fly, watched in this committee, result in pretty awful circumstances, unanticipated consequences, and again, I would just offer. However, the attempt to amend this further, I mean, can we have absolute assurance that this amendment, as conceptually stated, does what it's intended to do? Absolute assurance.
We can't guarantee that, but we can let him make his better intentions known. I think that's what he's trying to do. And I would share your opinion that I'm still not sure that, but I don't want to do this again on the conceptual, but I think it was a clear misintention. You're offering that. I will ask if there's objection to that amendment.
Remove my objection, sir.
That amendment. Thank you, amendment sir. Number.
Before you pass it.
Okay.
There also has to be a conforming change on page 5, line.
Now it's getting a little trickier here.
Line 8, because page 5, line 8 repealed part of that law. But the conceptual intent is to leave the Cook Inlet gas credit in place. To delete what I said, I wanted to delete lines 21 through 25, and then if there has to be a conforming language change on page 5 at line 8, that too.
We're going to, is there objection to that second part? I feel like we're sort of rearranging the deck furniture here on a certain ship, but anyway, that's, with that... that amendment, amendment number 1 as amended is before us.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman. Amendment number 3?
Amendment number, thank you for that, correction. And so the clerk notes we are at amendment number 3, and we have the amendment to number 3 as amended has been adopted without objection. And, now it's before us for final passage. I think we've played it out.
Thank you for the courtesy, Mr. Chair. I just want to address one more technical thing and then respond to a couple of the arguments. I have to do that. On page 2, Representative Hawker mentioned the 85% cap wasn't clear. I think it is clear. It says on line 29, you only get as high as 85% of the capital expenditure. Happy to go back to Ledge Legal if folks want to make that more clear. ACES passed 3.5 years ago. We've received, all the testimony has been it takes 5 to 7 years to get a field from exploration to online. We've had 3.5 years since all this exploration has started. The unopposed testimony has been that there has been lots of exploration up on the North Slope. And companies are not so so illogical to spend money on exploration if they don't think that there's going to be the capital to turn it into production. So the 5 to 7 year period that everybody has testified you need from the time of initial exploration to production, nobody's let that time pass under ACES. We're about to pull the rug under a system that's probably working before the amount of time that's allowed to get the fields under development. So I think that would be a mistake. And, you know, finally, if the goal is more jobs, more exploration, and more oil in the pipeline, this amendment is what's going to do it in combination with the next amendment, which I'll explain, of course. But I think I'm very comfortable granting exploration credits because I think they lead to more jobs and more exploration and more oil in the pipeline.
Okay. I'm assuming the objection is maintained.
Objection maintained.
We don't have, I guess, we're going to forego that whole fiscal note discussion that we were concerned about. We'll deal with if this amendment passes on final passage of the, out of committee.
Sorry, Mr. Chairman, fiscal note discussion.
On this amendment.
I see.
Just to expedite. Well, we'll deal with it depending upon certain things.
Sure.
So the clerk call the roll. And this is on amendment number 3 as amended.
Representative Guttenberg?
Yes.
Representative Jewell? No. Representative Hawker?
No.
Representative Wilson?
No.
Representative Costello?
No.
Representative Dugan?
Yes.
Representative Edgemond?
No.
Representative Fairclough?
No.
Representative Guerra?
Yes.
Representative Stoltz?
No.
Representative Thomas?
No. Close.
Clerk, announce the roll.
3 yeas and 8 nays.
So amendment number 3 as amended has not been adopted.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Fairclough.
Mr. Chairman, if I might ask the Department of Revenue, I would like to have a fiscal note on amendment number 3 and number 4 so that I can see the impact of the cost. I know that they've been voted down, but it would be helpful for me to understand what this particular concept costs.
Has amendment number 4 been voted down already?
Yeah.
Does somebody know how this process works better than I do?
Representative Guerra, if it passes, we need to know the fiscal either way, and I think it may resurface. So I think Representative Fairclough's observations are very in order because I'm just a net speculative manager that we may see these again, so we should know the answers the best we can. And we don't have that ability to call Mr. Butcher up to the from the gallery. So it's amendment number 4.
I move amendment number 4, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Amendment number 4 addresses the question raised by Representative Fairclough, maybe not to her satisfaction, but to mine. You have to do 2 things to get oil on the pipeline. You have to explore for it, and then you have to be able to monetize it. What we have heard from small producers is that for the fields that they are finding on the North Slope, it is very difficult to take a moderate-sized field without a production facility and monetize that oil. You need to be able to build a production facility, which costs in the tens of billions of dollars, the big ones over $100 million. So what Amendment number 4 does is that it grants also a 50% credit for the construction of production facilities. Again, we cap it at 85% with all the stackable credits that you have so that we're not paying more than 85%. This is one of the big blocks to development on the North Slope. There's only been one case where a big producer has allowed their production facilities and processing facilities to be used by an independent, only one case. If I'm a big producer and somebody comes to me and says, I really need to use your processing facility, I say, yeah, give me most of the interest in your field, right? And it's not an easy negotiating process for an independent. So we're trying to spur the development of the production facilities that are necessary to produce the oil. So amendment number 3 and 4 in combination, you get the exploration, and then you're able to monetize the oil by producing it. You know, some members of this legislature have made the case that access to processing facilities has been unfairly blocked. And I'm going to leave that argument to the side for the moment. But I think the state should be a partner in helping us get the production facilities we need to get the oil out of the ground. Again, it's the same philosophy. If the state is going to give away money, we should give money not that gets to be sent to Houston and to London and to New York and to shareholders, but we should tie that money to the state of Alaska. So in order to use the funds that Amendment Number 4 makes available, you have to spend money in Alaska, you have to hire people in Alaska, and you have to do what we want you to do with the money, which is build processing facilities and production facilities. So that's Amendment Number 4. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Discussion from other members?
And thank you, Mr. Chair, and I will respectfully oppose the amendment here. Again, this is, I don't remember if it was stated or not, but Mr. Chairman, this amendment starts out on line page 1, line 7, by essentially deleting the entire bill before us. And then replacing it with this. And I,
just a detail, Representative Hawker.
I don't believe I heard that detail. So that's a little bit of a problem for me. But also the specifics of this production facility cost credit, I think this language looks vaguely familiar. I'm not sure that there isn't another legislative bill vehicle already in the legislative process that does the same thing. And again, we've got certain conventions that we respect in this building, so that causes a problem, but if we would choose to chase out of that, I think it might be one on the other body, actually.
Oh, I don't think there are no rules, but what's that called, pulling a book bill from the Senate?
Just some specific language, I look at page 4, I mean, again, this was just, I've just had the time sitting and committed to look at this. Page 4, line 28 talks about what a production facility is, flow station, gathering center, a pump station, storage tank related. With respect, pump stations tend to be downstream assets, not upstream assets. I don't know that we've had the technical discussion to actually have understand what we might actually be empowering here. And likewise, we look at that next line. Definitions of production and paying quantities means production of oil and gas in quantities sufficient to recover the cost of operating and marketing. Again, this is supposed to be an upstream credit for the development of a specific asset. We have assiduously avoided allowing any tax benefits for marketing activities in any of the tax work we've done in this committee, at least in the 9 years that I've been here. So I have a little fear that laudable goal, I think the amendment before us requires a great deal more consideration than we can give it sitting at this table at this time, and I will be voting against it, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I have, I might be one of those people who have a bill addressing this, but the production facility issue, but it is nothing like this amendment. And I think the other one that somebody is contemplating is nothing like this either. Doesn't, I haven't seen it, but I'm in discussion with it. The whole concept of production facilities. A well might run $20 million pads. You start with your exploration. You go out and you do some seismic work. We have credits for that. They find sufficient oil or gas, I guess, at the end of the day, to go into production. They build a road. They drill the wells. They build the pipelines. They start pumping the oil to the facilities. In order to get into a facility, you either have to have a commercial agreement with somebody that already has one or find it is in sufficient quantities to finance it yourself. And one of the small explorers was in my office said they will either come up with a sound fiscal contract, put their oil into an existing facility, or build one themselves. And something that they mentioned that I hadn't heard before is the fact that, I guess I'm dating myself, but I built or worked on a lot of those over the since the early 70s. They're old, and there's inefficiencies built into them. And certainly we're seeing things happen to them, pump one corrosion problems. In 04, the BP corrosion problem, maybe they don't want to get into them at all because there are issues with safety. But in order to get your oil into the pipeline, which is a common carrier, you have to do quite a few things to it. You have to separate the sediments, the gas, the water, and meet it, get it to a standard that Alyeska, as the shipper, approves of, and it has to be metered. And the metered is, you're going to measure how much oil you're putting through there by the barrel, because they're going to be charging tariffs and costs. And to build a new facility is expensive. Now, if it's a facility out in Gubik, which is 100 miles south of the pipeline, you would not want to ship your oil 100 miles south to be charged, to ship it 100 miles farther back south, 100 miles north, and then 100 miles south on the taps. So you probably would want to be building a facility somewhere there, and that would probably require some small pump station to actually pump it into the pipeline. But if you're out on the Colville, in the Umiad area, why would you want to ship all of those external and wasteful processes, water, sediment, and believe me, sediment shows up in Valdez, in the oil. Why would you want to build, ship all that stuff into north into Prudhoe Bay to come south again? So when we're talking about giving new producers the opportunities and the ability to do things efficiently, which is what the state wants to do, which is what this bill wants to do, we would want to give them credits, because once there's a facility out there, then somebody else can build and explore and ship oil and more efficiently than pumping it 100 miles north to pump it south. So it only makes sense to do this. And I want to point something else out. On February 11th, Gaffney Klein's presentation to House Resources, I think it was Rich Ruggiero, talked about how is Alaska perceived today. Talked about production, talked about limiting the life of taps, but it also talked about how new resources viewed by some as stranded, which means they can't get access to this, and it's access to infrastructure. If we could build new infrastructure out in Alaska, we're encouraging a lot of new explorers, a lot of efficiencies, and this amendment is the first that I've seen that actually, in this committee, that actually approaches that. So I stand in support of this amendment because I think it's the things we want to do that the new explorers, the new producers in the future are going to want to see done regardless.
Thank you, Edward. Any other comments, questions, or Representative Guerra to wrap up?
Thank you. Representative Hawker was correct in both of these amendments. We intentionally delete the entirety of the governor's bill. For many reasons, including today's fiscal note, that shows that even if it works, it's going to cost the state upwards of $1 billion a year in lost revenue. Amendment number 4 does the most important thing we can do. You're not going to build a production facility unless you're on the verge of producing oil. This incentivizes the thing that produces the oil. Right? There are all these other credits out there. Development well credits may stem a production decline, may not. Service credits may stem a production decline, may not. A production facility adds new oil into the pipeline. It's what we want to do. So in combination with the exploration credits, the whole goal is to make sure that if the state is going to spend money, we get something for it, which is the big difference between this and the governor's approach. We want to make sure we get something for it. We're going to get exploration, we're going to get production, and that's where the state money is going to go. So I would hope that folks would consider supporting amendment number 4. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Guerra. Will the clerk please call the roll?
Representative Guerra?
Yes.
Representative Gutenberg?
Yes.
Representative Jewell?
No.
Representative Hawker?
No, ma'am.
Representative Wilson?
No.
Representative Costello?
No.
Representative Dugan?
Yes.
Representative Edgman?
No.
Representative Fairclough?
No.
Representative Thomas?
No.
Representative Stoltz?
No.
3 yeas, 8 nays.
So amendment number 4 has failed to pass. We have before us next amendment number 5. Representative Dugan?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move amendment number 5. You know, it's, Mr. Chairman, it's sort of like seeing the movie Groundhog Day again and again. But I'll try this. This is, as you will obviously see, not my handiwork. This is Mr. Bullock's handiwork, and he doesn't seem to be around.
He is.
Oh, is he back there? Hey, Don. So, oh, that, he is hiding back there. So all I wanted to say is please feel free if I'm sort of misrepresenting what it is I think happened here.
He can only do what you tell him to do.
I'm just worried to make sure that I'm telling you what I'm supposed to be. That's all I'm concerned about. This bill sets essentially a sunset date. And it sets it for 2014. And all of this verbiage just does that. It sort of takes everything that is in the bill, takes it out, and replaces it with the current language. And it seems to me that the reason for that is pretty obvious. We're being asked to pass a bill that we don't know what it's going to cost, don't know what its effect is going to be, and frankly don't know much at all about what kind of a fiscal situation we're going to leave at any point in time. So what this bill would do, or this amendment would do, is say, okay, go ahead and do what it is you're going to do, and by 2014, you've got to decide whether or not all of the stuff that's in here is actually working. If it's doing what's working in a way that you want it to work, have you decided that it isn't working? You know, we're not getting what we want out of it. You can sunset it. And in fact, as everybody at this table knows, the sunset dates are often the occasions in which people look at legislation and decide if they want to change it rather than simply sunset it. So it provides an opportunity to do all of those things on that date. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Fairclough.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I voted yes on the 25% on the House floor when we looked at ACEs, but the progressivity and the increase and the different knobs that were turned put me in a position to have to vote no on the overall bill. And Representative Hawker, and I've stated earlier, pointed out the discrepancies between what we anticipated that was shown to us during that ACEs debate and what's now being collected as high numbers. And I appreciate the 2014, and I'd like to know, just like you, what turning that knob will do. But what I'm fearful of for the state of Alaska is that sunset date would still create uncertainty for those who are sitting on the sidelines with an investment. And I believe I spoke to this earlier in the week, even last week, talking about we have at least one entity that came before us that said that they were here and making those investment decisions under PPT. And that under PPT, they watched ACEs go into effect, and now they're having difficulty being forced into production, basically, to try to recover upwards of over $100 million under $200 million. I can't remember if it was $147 or $184, but a significant portion of money being forced into production. And what I'm afraid with the amendment is that it still creates a climate of uncertainty for investors that are trying to bring capital to bear so that they can access our 45% credits if they're operating in a net operating loss for those facilities that we just talked about, for those gathering, those production, for that particular point. So I will listen to the discussion, but I'm inclined to vote no because it still creates that uncertainty going forward. And I do support holding industry accountable on the 15% bracketing that's been proposed in the amended governor's version so that we can make sure that those units are taxed in a fair and in the same way as all producers are doing when they go into production. So I'll listen to the discussion, but just because of the uncertainty associated with revisiting this in such a short term, I'll listen. Thank you, Representative.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Although I do appreciate what the maker of this amendment is trying to do, he's trying to bring somewhat certainty to something that is somewhat uncertain. But most of this bill does not take place until 2013, so it only gives about a year to find out what can happen. It is my understanding, although I haven't been part of it, that the legislature has been known to change things at any point. Just my understanding. And so I think if this doesn't work, I think the companies who may be affected by this probably know that. And I think that's the signal that if it's not working, that we need to do it. 2014, just to me, brings it just too close to when they even have a chance to stop doing it. And I personally, and this is just my belief, is that at some point, the state of Alaska has to stand on its own 2 feet in a lot of ways and quit changing rules every time they think that maybe they could get a little bit more out of it. And so, although I do appreciate what you're trying to do here, I think it takes much more time to develop these, and this date just would be way too close. Thank you.
Representative Gettenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In support of the amendment, obviously. The entire premise of this bill is based upon a couple things which I don't really agree with, and I don't think the administration has made its case. But we'll deal with that later on. But what we do know is that as hard as some of us have, we have not been able to get the administration to say they've done any modeling. There's an assumption that if we reduce the tax rate, we do these things to the to credits, then we will get more exploration and more development, more production. And that's all good. But constantly and repeatedly over the last 2 weeks, when we ask the question, what are the assumptions that you've made or what modeling that you've done will get you there to justify what has happened? And, you know, in some cases it's been frustrating for me because maybe in conversation they've made these assumptions, but they've never done anything on paper that says this many more wells, this many more pipelines, this much more increased production. We certainly haven't seen it, and many people have asked for it. So bringing back for a date certain, the administration will be able to say, we have this many more permits. We have this many people applying for ice roads. We have this much infield development going on. They're recracking their wells. They're doing more directional drilling because there's more permits on the table. We've seen an increase in employment. We've seen, and it's like, then we just, and I'll be one of those people that say, great, let's just keep rolling, because that obviously the bill has been successful. But on the other hand, nothing happens. This is the other sin. Then it's time to tweak it. I expect hopefully it'll be somewhere in the middle, and then we can fix things. We can rearrange things, whether we need more producers, we need more production facility issues addressed, or whatever it is working, then we can force the issue. But I think the state needs to have, if we're going to pass this bill, needs to have a hard line on it. We need to see something happen by a certain date. Otherwise, it's telling us that maybe neither one of these is, we need to come up with a whole other approach to getting things done. So, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Guerra.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think this is a wise amendment because I'm scared that the companies are going to do exactly what they promised during the debates. Exxon, British Petroleum, both promised they won't drill a single new exploration well if we pass the governor's bill. Conoco promised that they might not. And I think Representative Dugan's amendment says if they do as little as they promise, they lose the benefit of the governor's bill. So I think it's smart. I think it also encourages them to do something better than what they promised if they want to keep the money the state's offering to give them. Thank you.
Representative Fairclough.
Mr. Chairman, on that point, we've been trying to be accurate as far as reflecting what people say or don't say. I certainly did not hear companies promise not to do something. What I heard them say is they couldn't promise that they would do something, that they had to take particular projects back and compete with other projects to see if corporates would make decisions on where they would allocate those resources around the world. We have some companies that are saying that they're promising in the headlines to only frack in Alaska to come up here, but when we say disparaging comments about larger producers, I find that hard not to rise and at least comment that and correct the record that they didn't say they weren't going to do something. They said they would compete for those assets. So with that correction, I'd just like to add for the consideration of the committee along those lines too, all companies are not alike. Some people mine, some people sell pets. They do all kinds of different things, and we're lumping all of oil and gas exploration into one bottle, and we're trying to sell it to the Finance Committee. And I'm not buying. They're different companies. The companies that we've referred to that have large capital assets that are making money that we're comparing their financials on and analyzing whether it's fair that they have that much profit. Those companies, their portfolio and their models are buying up smaller companies and not always in the exploration. It's not that they don't do it. They do it on occasion. We've seen ConocoPhillips do it sometimes, but we don't necessarily see those particular companies doing it all of the time. We do see smaller producers who have a limited amount of assets, a capitalization, come in and do actual exploration. And on some of those models, they take that find and they take it to the bank, and their basic business model is to go out and look for oil, look for coal, or look for something else. They're explorers that take that particular business model, and with that expertise, they sell it on an open market to someone who's willing to buy it. And the people who are buying those products in the state of Alaska have been referred to multiple times here. So I just want the record to be clear that when we talk about oil and gas, we're talking about many different businesses. And when we talk about labor that was referred to, we're talking about service industry businesses that build ice roads or support oil and gas, the oil and gas industry in many different ways. And so this committee's heard me say it before. You'll hear me say it on the floor. But cruise construction is just, they're people that I know. They're people I've had dinner with, but I've heard their story, and their story resonates with me that they were on the North Slope with 200-plus employees, and they're in North Dakota now. They have remobilized their assets so they can put those assets to work. And the tax bill and the choices of policies before us have to do with a balanced approach to those different kinds of models and the different types of companies that are investing in Alaska. So I believe that I'm consistent in saying that when I look at this particular piece of paper, that I see that we're doing a pretty good job on exploration in the credits. I think that that it's valid to say that it's expensive to try to capitalize production facilities. But I think that we have a 45% credit, a combination of two of them that are available for that kind. And I think that we have to look at balancing those policy approaches. And specifically, Mr. Chairman, back to the amendment, it does create uncertainty. It continues to create the uncertainty for capitalization in the production side of the house, not the entry level for those producers or the development level, but the producers. And so for me, I segment it out into three different types of businesses, actually even a fourth with the service. And then when we look at the state as far as credits go, the state's divided into three different regions. And something that I learned during this discussion was a little bit about Middle Earth. And so that's a new term for me. For those of you who don't know it, we have regions that our credits are associated with in the North Slope, north of 68, is that correct way to describe it, is the North Slope region, and we have the Cook Inlet region that has some credits allocated to it, and everywhere in between is Middle Earth. So that was my new tidbit for this legislative session. But I appreciate the effort in trying to hold industry accountable. I certainly am looking to that. I would just restate that I think that we took too big a bite out of that apple, that I supported the first bite at a 25% tax rate, but I believe that we've went too far and we have to go back and relook at the policies.
And Lord, that sounds like sort of a Dungeon Dragon thing. You also wouldn't want to mention in the personals ad. Representative Dugan, wrap up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a couple of specific points. The date, 2014, was selected because it mimics how long we left ACES alone before we decided to amend it. You know, if we had enough experience to offer this bill that's in front of us, certainly we'll have enough experience in exactly the same amount of time to decide whether we've made good decisions or bad decisions, I think. Secondly, I wanted to apologize. I'm not trying to sell anything to the committee here. What I'm trying to do is to make sure that the committee doesn't inadvertently end up buying a pig in a poke, because we don't really know what's going to happen. You know, there have been statements made, lots of statements made about, you know, what was testified to, but what I heard testified to was the strongest statement was, we'll look at it again. So we don't have any assurance that this is going to result in a single drop of oil. That's just not what we've been told. And do I know what the oil patch is going to be like in 2 years or 3 years? No, I don't. And neither does anybody else at this table. You know, we could pass this bill out and it goes all the way through and the governor signs it. And then we can just add that to our prayers every night, I guess. But that's about the best that we're going to do. And in a case like that, I don't think it's responsible to say, and we're going to, you know, give you this money. We're not really going to hold you to anything. And by the way, we're never going to go back and look at our discussion again. You know, we go to great lengths to do reviews of things. And all I'm saying is that it doesn't seem to me that if we're going to do something, take such a big jump into the unknown as what's being proposed here, that we ought to at least have a safety belt that's going to snap us back if it turns out that we don't get all of the good stuff that people at this committee want to have happen.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Dugan. Will the clerk please call the roll?
Representative Fairclough?
No.
Representative Guerra?
Yes.
Representative Gutenberg?
Yes.
Representative Jewell?
Oh.
Representative Hawker?
No, ma'am.
Representative Wilson?
No.
Representative Costello?
No.
Representative Dugan?
Yes.
Representative Edgman?
No.
Representative Stoltz?
No.
Representative Thomas?
No. Clerk, please announce the roll.
Three yeas, eight nays.
Well, amendment number five has failed.
Mr. You put them all together. We had enough for one amendment.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to ask for a point of personal privilege, if you would give me just 2 minutes.
And go ahead, Representative Garrett.
You know, in these debates, it's very difficult. It's always tempting to assume the person on the other side isn't telling the truth. It's very hard to keep the arguments on the merits. But, you know, I've heard this, you're not telling the truth thing just one time too many. And the last, one of the last comments were that I did not represent what BP and Exxon said accurately. So if I could just read from the transcripts very briefly, when they told us that they would not go ahead with exploration wells, I believe I was quite accurate about it. Claire Fitzpatrick from British Petroleum, and I'm happy to share the transcript, said BP does not do what's referred to as traditional exploratory wells. She went on to say it is not BP's current intention, although that may change, I only own 27% of Prudhoe Bay, to do what is technically classified as an exploration well. I believe I rendered that completely accurately. When I asked Exxon the same question, I asked them if they had drilled an exploration well, what, in the last 20 years? Their answer was, I think the last one we did was in 1992. And then I asked them if their plan was to continue that practice of not drilling exploration wells. And they said, I can't promise you that yet the governor's bill would lead to increased exploration. I think I was very accurate about what I said. And I think this debate will go much better if we disagree on the merits, if we have disagreements, but not always try and look to make the person you disagree with as if they've misrepresented the facts. Thank you.
Representative Hawker.
And thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate the latitude. I do believe in this case Representative Garrett is exactly correct in his characterization of one part of a conversation. We did have this discussion previously, so did I just want to reiterate and like this transcript to reflect that the two large companies specifically referenced there, BP, and it is not British Petroleum, it is BP Alaska. I'll repeat that one more time. BP Alaska and Exxon, their corporate business profile is not exploration. They are not the explorers. BP has never explored for and found a drop of oil in Alaska, I believe, other than the Madami prospect. BP acquires production from the explorers who go out, and their business is to locate and find it. So does Exxon, largely. They are in to characterize their testimony as dissing the state, as saying, we don't care what you do, we're not going to do anything anyway, is just not accurate. Those entities are looking for the support they need to operate profitably. This bill attempts to restore a balance to our tax production system. So, again, I sincerely believe that the intent of Rep. Fairclough was absolutely correct, as was the clarification by Rep. Guerra, but I'd sure like to be sure that the record reflects that there is an entire context in which these conversations need to be kept. And thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And we'll move forward with that. I think everybody understands careful language is better. So I'm probably as guilty as other times as anybody. We have amendment number two before us. Is there, I want to make sure everybody has that before we go on. And it's my amendment. I'll move amendment number two and ask for an objection. Amendment number two is a truly is a it was a clerical slash typo error. If you look at the on page seven on lines 13 through 23, you see a increasing percentage, and then it goes from 22.5 to 15. That's clearly in the clerical typographical error. The language of the proposed amendment number two would be to delete the number 15 on line 23. That was subsection 6 is and replace it with 25, which is that. And I just put on the record that that was the actual intent. I'd like just the commissioner to briefly come forward. So this is an important bill. I just want to make sure we take all the steps. Commissioner Butcher.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner Designee Brian Butcher, Department of Revenue. You are correct, Mr. Chairman. That was a technical error. It should go from 22.5 up to 25, not down to 15.
That would affect the fiscal note if we didn't adopt.
Apparently not in the state's interest.
It depends how you look at it, I guess. Is there any objection to maintain? Hearing none, amendment number 2 is adopted. Next, we had amendment number 1. I'm going to not offer that, but I just want to note for the record, amendment number 1 will be replaced by number 6. Rather than trying to amend the amendment, I thought it would be a cleaner process, and appreciate Representative Hawker's catch on this. It's closer to the bill. I will move amendment number 6, and ask Representative Hawker to speak to this.
Thank you, Mr. Carter. This gets a little bit convoluted, and I think I can describe it. I could see the problem, but talking about it sometimes becomes difficult. This is the interplay in how bills are crafted and trying to put language together that accomplishes what is clearly what we want to do. The provision referenced here on page 3, line 14, is the provision that authorizes the 15% base progressivity and its curve for certain production from certain areas limited to the first 7 consecutive years after that production commences. And so the areas that we're referring to are areas, again, lines 16 and 17, that had not been within a unit, had not previously been within an established unit, or areas that had not been in commercial production as of December 31st, 2008. This provision, the bill as introduced by the administration originally contained a December 31, 2010 date there. That was moved back to 2008 in the House Resources Committee specifically to make certain that prospective developments, I believe, related to potentially Armstrong and Repsol would in fact qualify as incentivize and bring that new exploration into the state. When we put the in this committee and during the CS process, the decision was made that that 15% benefit was only to exist for the first 7 consecutive years of production for that particular lease or property. The concern that I identified, and for what it's worth, I've conferred with Mr. Bullock, who wrote this, as well as Co-Chairman Feige of the Senate, or excuse me, he would be the House Resources Committee, who concurs, was that as this is written, when you interplay it with the effective date of the provision, which is January 1st, 2012, that we would have, that would have been the kickoff date for the 7 consecutive years, not the 7 consecutive years after the start of sustained production, actually. So, and as I said, it's kind of gets to one of those convoluted, circuitous concerns with getting the effective dates right. But this language is, you can see where it, following that word production up there on page 3, line 15, produced during the first 7 consecutive years after the start of sustained production, again, or produced during the first 7 years after the effective date of this bill section, which is ever later. We want to be sure that everyone that qualifies under this gets 7 years of benefit. And that's really what the amendment does, where there was sufficient ambiguity in the existing paragraph that someone who had actually started production before the effective date of this bill might be denied the benefits intended to be conferred by the bill. recognizing again this is all would be new production coming online. There's no a fiscal consequence to this change, but I think it is really important in making sure that our intentions are clear.
Representative Guerra.
Thank you. I guess it would be helpful for me to know with the change in the language, if there are any fields under the amendment that are now going to get the 15% tax rate that wouldn't have if we don't do the amendment. And what comes to mind, though I'm not sure about this, is the Liberty Field. If the Liberty Field were unitized before 2008, under the bill without the amendment, the Liberty Field pays a 25% tax rate plus progressivity, and under the amendment, since they haven't started producing yet, they would get the 15% rate. I don't know if those dates are right for the Liberty Field, but I guess I would need the Department of Revenue or Natural Resources to give us some examples of which ones now will no longer pay 25% and will pay 15% if we adopt the amendment.
In my response, I defer to Council and the Department to talk specifically to it. Again, the amendment clarifies what the intent was coming out of the House Resources Committee, and it is not expanding the scope of the original intent of the language.
And I guess I probably just my cook inlet mistake here. We both are, so it's trying to keep consistent with what the intent was, and I goofed up.
And actually, Mr. Chairman, I apologize there too, because I was thinking of my answer, and somebody reminded the specific request of Liberty. That's federal. That's not us. Doesn't have any effect on Liberty.
Is there objection maintained?
Question.
Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Dugan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So this language changes.
Thank you. This language changes essentially who gets a treatment in which you get seven, essentially free years, I get it, is the way I think of it, before you start paying an enhanced tax. A low rent, or low cost years, excuse me, not free, I don't mean to overstate the case. And does it affect current fields?
Commissioner Butcher, why don't you come forward?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner Designee Butcher. Through the chair, Representative Dugan, this particular aspect of the bill covers fields that have not been unitized or developed. So it's my understanding that it would not include anything. There would not be something coming on that would be brought into this.
Thank you. That's what I thought, but I just wanted to make sure.
Well, it's good to get this on the record, and I appreciate that you persist and got this on the record with the commissioner. And again, this was getting this back to the in our imprecise efforts of taking one CS to another, we inadvertently undid some of the work of the previous committee. So. This is there an objection? Representative Guerra.
Thank you, sir. And I understand this is inadvertent. I just need to understand the intention of the last committee. And I'm wondering if by this amendment we take a field that somebody has unitized already under ACES, we're planning on moving ahead with, are on their way to moving ahead with, but we're still going to give them the 15% tax rate because they haven't started production until after the effective date of this bill, which would seem wrong. You wouldn't want to give somebody that lower tax rate if they were on the verge of developing something under ACES. So I guess that is still my question. And if that's what this amendment would do, which would to lower the tax rate on a field that somebody's already unitized and was on their way to moving ahead with production with, I guess I oppose the Resources Committee's intentions on this language. I don't know if it's Mr. Bullock that explains that or who, but that's my concern.
Well, I'm going to do something we don't normally do. Just happened to amble in, the co-chair of the Resources Committee. And for the purposes of having a clarity in the record, Representative Feige, would you mind coming forward?
I bet you wouldn't, because you probably came up here because you were listening.
This will teach you.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. Representative Feige, I'm Lucy Call, co-chairman of the House Resources Committee. To the date that Representative Guerra mentioned, our intent in committee with that was to segregate areas that essentially had not been put into production versus areas that already were in production. We wanted to leave the effective base tax rate at 25% for areas that were already in production, and areas outside, we believe the intent was to tax them at a lower base rate. The problem with that, with the way the bill language originally was, it talked about units. And in the case of Brookrange Petroleum and Armstrong, they had leases that did not have any current production in them, but those leases were already in existing units. So if we had left it the way it, with the original date, it would have essentially exempted them and kept their as yet to be produced areas at the higher base tax rate. By changing the date and setting the date that if you were in a unit on that particular day, it segregated the explored as yet to be developed areas from the producing areas, and that's why we changed it.
Thank you, Representative Feige. Is objection? Did you have a question, Chairman?
No, Mr. Chairman. Believe it or not, I think I understood that.
So fortuitous, you happen to be strolling by, Representative Feige.
I'm glad I could be of assistance, Mr. Chairman.
Is objection maintained to amendment? I think it was number 2. Let me pull this.
Six.
Amendment number 6. Hearing,
Mr. Chair, objection just for discussion briefly.
Please.
I know that if I maintain an objection, there will be somewhere between an 8-3 or 10-1 vote going the wrong way. I object to granting this lower tax rate to fields that I think were going to be produced anyway. But
there's nothing. There's any member has a prerogative, and if you want to vote on the record, I won't consider it any delay. It's your right as a member.
Thank you. I know I have the right to delay, but I won't delay. So
it's not delay. It's process.
I'll withdraw the objection.
But that amendment number 6 is adopted. Are there any other amendments? This is the fun part we get to now. We've already had testimony. We'll just take a very brief at ease.
Thank you.
I know we need to go next. House Finance, come back to you, order. It's 4:47 p.m. the same day we started. We have House Bill 110 still before us. We're nearing the end of the process in this committee, perhaps. We'll see. Representative Fairclough, Madam Vice Chair.
Mr. Chairman, I move from committee the CS for House Bill 110 Finance 27-GH1007 /I-Bullock 32711 with attached fiscal note package dated 32811 from committee with individual committee recommendations.
As amended?
As amended.
Okay. There is objection. We'll commence with discussion. Let's go first. Is everybody all played up? No, Representative Guerra, then Gettenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, I want to concede that many of the members were right when they said it's a smart thing for the state to do something like this. And actually, it's something that Senator French and I asked the governor to do, which is to start pitching the positive parts of ACEs. So I think that's the folks who said that, I think, were right. When the governor proposed this bill, he proposed it as something that would not cost the state money over the long term and that would increase production. Based on the fiscal note that we have today, page 2, even with a 5% increase in production, the state loses over $3.5 billion in revenue over the next 5 years. And that seems to continue, and that revenue loss seems to grow as the years pass. When you're talking about the economy, you have to talk about the whole economy. If you have a legislature that has $1 billion a year less than it does right now, you have to wonder what you're going to do in terms of hiring teachers and firefighters and troopers. I think you do more damage to the economy by adopting this bill than you do by leaving things as they are. I think given the two approaches, one, giving companies money and hoping they give it back to you, and the other saying you only get credits if you do the things we want you to do, the second makes more sense. I don't think that there's, in the state's history, when the ELF tax rate kept going down and down and down and down and down, which it did through 2006, down to 0% on 15 of the 19 fields on the North Slope, we saw that the production decline remained the same, 6% a year. Employment was lower and investment was lower on the North Slope, according to the numbers we got from the state. Giving companies tax money and telling them they can decide whatever they want to do with it results in a flight of money from the state. That's what's happened historically. And so I think the smart approach is to say we will pay for things if they result in more oil. And that's why we filed the series of amendments we did. We want more exploration wells. We'll give you money if you produce more exploration wells. We want more production. We will help pay for processing facilities. And the difference between our approach and the governor's approach is our approach says you only get the money if you help increase production. And the final problem I have with the governor's bill is it does what the Department of Revenue said was not wise 4 years ago. Companies that have invested in major oil field developments have an economic incentive to continue the production of those wells in those fields. And that's why in ACEs, we only granted a 20% credit for infield production. And we were told that if we gave them any more money, we would be giving them money that to do what they were going to do anyway, to maintain the lives of those fields. So in the end, Mr. Chair, I want to make sure if we're going to invest money that we get something back for it. And I don't think the governor's bill gives us adequate assurances that the state of Alaska gets anything other than a loss in revenue. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you for the way you've conducted the meetings. It's been refreshing. I guess this is when we look at the long view and looking back at the bill as we are on the verge of passing it out of committee, and look at the things that made sense and didn't make sense, and the justification, and think about the things that we were looking for. And from my perspective, certainly looking for some answers that I didn't get. I made reference early on, and actually a couple times, that you know, in many ways, a tax fiscal regime and changing it is an equation. You've got an equal sign in the middle. You've got an equation on one side, an equation on the other side. You know, and sometimes 2 + 2 = 5, and you have to weigh the value of if 5 has a return to the state. And sometimes, so we had the administration come in and certainly from the administration, from the producers, and from all of the everybody down the line, there were two assumptions. It was the competitive nature of the fiscal policy, and it was chasing capital. And those were the thematic things that, from my perspective, it looked like it was coordinated or focused, or it was more like a marketing plan than coming to the table with a real equation that made sense. Because when I looked and asked the administration for the modeling, what made them think that there was an upside, can they predict? Even if it's a fantasy document, at least tell us where you see the numbers cross from revenue to increase in production. You know, we were just told constantly, well, we can't do that. That's, that's beyond our realm. And that was troubling to me. And it was even as much troubling to me the fact that the two consultants that were involved in this, that were privates, that were outside of the realm of the administration, that weren't producers, that didn't have a ball in the game, disagreed with that assumption. Now, I believe this Department of Revenue had Gaffney Klein in to do a presentation before House Resources before the bill was on the table, and in his presentation, which I had to find the other day. He talks about designing a fiscal system. Two parts art, one part for every science. But you know, when you start a painting, at least you have tubes of paint, or at least you have something that you know you're going to be applying and how it's going to be applied, or some idea. But when he talked about influencing factors, he has 9 in his presentation, and the last one, he says, and last is competition from everywhere. Now, Mr. Ruggiero, if you look at his resume, he's somebody with a lot of private sector experience. He's been an industry guy. He's been, the guy has to evaluate these things, whether to go ahead or not. And his presentation is online, and it's available to watch as well. That was the last time he was seen in resources, and we certainly didn't see him here. And then we had to bring in Rick Harper. And Rick Harper is somebody that has pretty much of a credential that at times I haven't agreed with him. But when he viewed this fiscal regime, he rolled his eyes. You know, and he had an hour and a half, 2 hours, or 2 hours here. He said, these are not the decision-making things that are really important to you. And what he said was, the things that should be important in building a fiscal structure are the things you're not hearing. And I don't know what those things we're not hearing, but I was really disappointed that the administration did not put this on the table. And those things and all of those independent consultants that we've had over the years to weigh issues so that we can make a fair and accurate assessment of what direction we want to bring this state. And we're on the verge of hearing, of moving the bill, and the only two people that were outside of this building had serious flaws or questions about what we're doing here and how we're defining this question to get it answered. So I scratch my head. I don't think we've had all of the things on the table. I don't think I'm not going to challenge the motives of the administration, but I don't think they've made the case for the state to adopt this fiscal regime. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am going to vote to pass this out, and here's why. I think we do have to look at the entire picture. You're absolutely correct, President Guerra. So what is the whole picture for me? And it's about jobs, and it's about development, and it's about keeping oil coming down the line. I have been convinced that it's going down, and I haven't seen any new oil coming online. And so that questions for me is why. So I look at the exploration part of it. Are we getting explorers? From what I can see, absolutely we are. So then the second question for me is, in a way, are the explorers not developing it and being the producers? Because they're explorers. That's what they do. They explore. They now have to go and take it into the boardroom and be able to sell the package that Alaska has. And what is that package? It contains some credits, and it contains the worst part of it is that you as a company, the more money you make, the more money we'll take. Well, that's really a hard sell in my book. I think that we don't use incentives to bring business in means that you're not into reality. When box stores want to come in or big development wants to come in, it's normal to take property taxes and put them on the side so that we can get jobs in the market and we can have more revenue down the line. So we do that in everyday business. You know, for me, this is going to produce more jobs. It's going to allow, hopefully, my community to keep being able to have heating oil to heat their houses, but hopefully we're going to be looking at other ways of energy, not just oil. But that's something that we haven't done as a state. We haven't done as legislators as to push forward, in my opinion, quick enough, a better affordable energy. Could we have had more information? I think you could always have more information, but for me, I went out into the community and I asked those questions. I asked them, did you see jobs leave when ACES came? Could you be doing more if this passes? And the answer I got from the Fairbanks North Pole area was, yes, jobs did get left on the side. We could show you in our yard that they're there. And yes, we do believe that if we make some changes, that we will get those jobs back. Those are the service industries. They're the ones that live in my neighborhood who some are working and some are hoping that they'll be working. So for me, this is a no-brainer. Have we gone far enough? Have we gone too far? I don't know. I know what we're doing doesn't work, and I'm willing to make that try. Thank you.
Another closing remarks? Representative Dugan.
I'm just going to try and outweigh Representative Guerra. I can tell by the look on his face I wasn't going to be able to do that. I can keep this, my position on this, pretty short and not so sweet. This is a bill that gives a lot of money out of the state treasury to the oil industry. It doesn't require anything in return, and it goes on forever. That is not the profile of a bill that I can support. And I'm surprised anybody else at this table can support it themselves. I mean, it just, you know, we can start quibbling about who, what companies were doing well and aren't doing well anymore and all the rest of that, but these are the salient facts that we have in front of us. Therefore, I will not be supporting this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else? I'll just close. I'm not adding debate. I could probably give some comments at confessions of a former ACES supporter or something that, but I think I've done that a few times. I want to thank the people of this process. This has been a couple of weeks, and we through this process, and we probably had a couple of tense moments, and I think my friends around the table from both sides of the aisle helped me make sure that I conducted it. It's not through my efforts, but through other folks helping me. I being tolerant and patient. I want to thank a couple of staffers, Ms. Delbridge, who was TD-wide over to my office and brought a lot of no shortness of enthusiasm, which I guess we call persistence and annoyance in some ways, but all well intentioned and for the cause of trying to get through this process. And my newest staffer, Joe Michelle, he's from Fairbanks, but don't think he's an affirmative action hire because of that.
He's going to be a regent next, right?
But I want to thank Mr. Bullock, who scurried out of here because he's starting to redraft the CS with the amendments. It's been an unending process, and I think mistakes he's made is maybe a lot of us, myself particularly, have often miscommunicated what we were really meaning to do, and that's usually often the mistake around here. And it's I want to thank our committee staff through uncertainty of times of meetings and facilitating a meeting from another jurisdiction in Anchorage, making sure everything went along through our committee procedures and Alaskans could participate and everything was adequately recorded. As this is certainly an important issue. It's a legacy issue. Usually we get to work more than a few legacy issues in a short tenure. And Commissioner Butcher, this is your first project. I know I don't know if you thought it was more of a baptism or I was a Lutheran, but it was more of a sprinkle or a dunking stool, so I'm not sure. But it's this is the friendlier side of our bicameral process, if that provides you any comfort.
Mr. Chairman, you should know that by now.
So with that, I didn't want to debate the bill in my closing, take advantage, but I do want to thank, and I want to thank all the members here for the process. The House is known for a better process, and this committee, even in my worst moments, I think we're better than other places. I'll leave. Sometimes I say too much.
There goes conference.
we'll do a roll call on this motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just moment before we do that, I want to echo your comments about the process, and that I recognize that sometimes I can be a trial, and I was appreciative of the fact that you were able to put up with some of my stupider questions, and I just appreciate the way this whole process has been conducted. Thank you.
Thank you. Will the clerk please call the roll?
Representative Edgman.
Yes.
Representative Fairclough.
Yes.
Representative Guerra.
No.
Representative Gutenberg.
Gutenberg. No.
Representative Jewell.
What time to correct this? Day 73.
Yes.
Representative Hawker.
Yes.
Representative Wilson.
Yes.
Representative Costello.
Yes.
Representative Dugan.
No.
Representative Thomas.
Yes.
Representative Stoltz.
Yes. Will the clerk please announce the roll?
8 yea, 3 nay.
The bill's moved out of the committee. The members stay and sign the committee report. And we are back tomorrow at 1:30. We have a scheduled meeting at 8:30. You know what? We don't need to meet at 8:30 tomorrow. Come back in at 1:30. Everybody has worked real hard on this process, and thank you all for that, for your diligence. So with that, the bill's moved out of committee, signed a report. We'll see each other again in here at 1:30.
Smiley faces and all.